Okay, so we have Sonia Kadir on the line right now. She is a member of the Awami Workers Party. She's currently from Pakistan. She's currently in Australia. She's also has been involved in the setting up of a feminist collective in Pakistan and is involved in many political struggles and things in Pakistan. So good morning, Sonia.
Good morning.
All right. So I guess first question we can ask you is, start by maybe telling you, you can tell us about yourself and, you know, what drives you politically and how did you get involved in politics? And then maybe we can move on to talking about the greater political context for Pakistan and what you're involved in.
Sure. Actually, it's interesting. I think I came to the left through my personal struggles as a woman in Pakistan. So even though I've done more work on feminism lately, but I think even initially my interest in politics and my politicization had a lot to do with my personal experience as a woman. And then also I think just sort of being part of the lawyers' movement back in 2007, 2008, this is when I was in college, and my college was one of the places I was involved very actively in the lawyers' movement in Pakistan, and I was also just starting law school at that time. So that was, I think, for our generation, one of the events that sort of made a lot of us think about political issues much more seriously. And after it ended, I think I sort of remained I think I got even more active because at the same time, I was also studying and I was taking a lot of courses in history and politics and was able to sort of be in a space where there were professors who were also radical and was left-wing. And so then just be able to meet the people who were, you know, part of left-wing parties and see the work that they were doing.
Yeah. So what are the kind of like current struggles that are happening and movements that are happening in Pakistan, Pakistani politics that you are currently involved in?
Okay, so the work that I'm personally doing the most is around the feminist issues. And this also came out of having been part of the left for many, many years. And it's just that when, as a left-wing activist, as a woman, you're doing that work, it's just... I think as a personal sort of just attempt to do that work, it's also kind of hard because there are issues of gender that keep cropping up. And whether you're whether you sort of take up the question of organizing female workers, or whether it's just you trying to interact with other comrades who may not be able to understand how sort of gender affects our personal interactions as well. So because of that, we sort of created this group called the Feminist Collective. This is about 1.5 years ago. And the idea behind that was to be able to do left work with a feminist sort of methodology in mind. And other than that, the kind of work that's happening in Pakistan, of course, it includes a lot of work around housing rights because... Pakistan is, and especially the province where I'm from, Punjab, it's the biggest province, most populated, most economically sort of well off. And it's becoming increasingly urbanized. And because of that, a lot of people who live on the land, small farmers, etc., they are being evicted, and there's house, a lot of like land development happening, so whether they're building gated housing societies, etc. So that kind of work around squatters' rights and people who live in informal sort of settings in the, on that land, or whether they're farmers and they're being evicted. So I think right now we're trying to sort of also create this much larger campaign around right to the city, which I think is where, in terms of where we are located, that's really becoming the more important struggle for the future.
Do you want to tell us more about the kind of greater kind of political context in Pakistan? Like, you know, what is sort of the current government and sort of how it affects kind of like, you know, left-wing politics and building a left movement in Pakistan?
So the left, like I would say anywhere, I guess, in the world right now, the left is quite fractured. It's very, very small. And especially in bigger cities, it is very difficult to do that kind of work because of how marginal it is and how much more money is, you know, important in politics now. So, especially electoral politics. So it's kind of difficult to be a major force in any, like, large city. But having said that, in smaller cities, it's still smaller cities, smaller towns. It's still a little bit easier to do that kind of work. But in general, Pakistan's present government, it's Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz, which is a center-right party, and they are very business-oriented, very trade-oriented. And they've, I think the interesting thing is that Pakistan has had. Throughout its history, Pakistan's had a lot of coups and military dictatorships. So this is the first time that I think this is the second democratic government that has that is almost finishing its term. It will finish in 2018. So I think for Pakistan, and I mean, I know that the struggles around social rights are so extremely important, but at some level, the left also seems at a back foot because. Just defending democracy so hard in Pakistan because all the time there is this fear that the military is going to come back. And so what happened is during the lawyers' movement after which I was talking about earlier, this was the movement when there were the last against the last military general Musharraf, there was a sort of. Movement of the judiciary and of the lawyers, and after which he first of all had to remove the emergency that he had imposed. He had to, and also then eventually there was a he had to have elections. A democratic government came in. Then he also had to resign as a president, and eventually the judiciary then had to be restored by the democratic government because of the pressure of the lawyers' movement. But since then, we've had democratic government. So there was that, the first one, which was the Pakistan People's Party. Then they handed over power to the present government. But throughout this time, it's interesting that it's only been a couple of years, but already the military has gained so much ground again. And I think there is a war of legitimacy always in Pakistan. And that war... I mean, since even if they're able to sort of push the establishment on the back foot for a while, they're able to gain that ground back very, very quickly. So this is what they've done again in the last 2-3 years. And now, especially because there is this new sort of, I would say, a regional change shift towards China. So China's building a Pakistan Economic Corridor and Pakistan-China Economic Corridor, sorry, and... which is part of its like larger plans for all of Asia as a new Silk Road that it wants to build. So there is because a lot of money is coming in, a lot of investment is coming in. It's becoming really, really hard to sort of to be critical of anything because the stakes are so high, and the establishment, especially the military, is very heavily involved in the businesses they're doing. And I think they're taking the huge sort of chunk of the business interests. And because of that, they are also very conscious at this moment of any critique, whether of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, which, of course, is the fact that we don't know how much Pakistan will sort of really gain from that, like in terms of how much, because Pakistan is actually going to go in huge debt to China. And all of these infrastructure projects that are being built, how much do they actually help Pakistan? And also, there's a huge environmental concern. So, for instance, China's closing its own coal-powered sort of plants. I think the last one just closed recently. And it's building them in Pakistan now. And as activists, as civil society, we are not allowed to question that because if you do that, then you're questioning the development model, you question the state, and that is sort of considered sort of treasonous, kind of almost now. I think in some ways, I think the situation at this particular moment is sort of getting much more critical, and the security state is really taking a much more sort of a monstrous form at the moment.
Yeah, I have a question basically, what is kind of like the relationship between, because, you know, most of people's views on politics on Pakistan is probably actually framed by the United States imperialism. And so what is kind of the relationship between the United States and Pakistan and, you know, how that influences kind of the politics on the ground in terms of social movements and the struggles?
So I think Pakistan from the very beginning very firmly joined the U.S. camp. So it has historically been like a very good ally in almost all the wars that the U.S. has fought, and has given its sort of, you know, given its territory to be used as bases for different American wars, and also sort of very wholeheartedly taken on the agenda of the World Bank, of IMF, so a structural sort of the restructuring of the entire economy, etc. But there's also a lot of dissent against that on the ground. So some of it is also comes from the right wing, which sort of has never really stood up against the sort of economic imperialism of the U.S. Is still very vocally against the sort of what they see as a cultural imperialism. So for them, the question is much more around issues of religion and women's rights and how they see a modernization, Americanization of Pakistani culture. But on the ground, people who are affected by the sort of structural adjustment programs that IMF or World Bank sort of pushed through over the last decades. They are critical of, and of course they see America as a continuation of the British imperialism or suffering from British imperialist power. So definitely there is that understanding, I think, on the ground within social movements of the kind of role that America has played in the wars and sort of really destabilizing Pakistan and taking it to the point where it is today, where the in terms of the security situation, in terms of all these small militant organizations, and of course, even though the West generally sort of has this mantra of how, you know, there is a war on terrorism and the West is under attack, whereas in reality, it's really the people on the ground, and not even, I mean, in the big cities, but also actually in the smaller towns and the more marginal cities, and even like in tribal areas, etc., people who are actually affected by this outbreak of violence from both sides, whether it is the state and the military trying to, what they say, in their war against terror, war on terror, but also as well as the way the militants sort of create violence. But then those places are, because there's so many bombings, etc., as well, in Pakistan all the time. So, I think on the ground there is a very clear understanding of these issues. Sorry, what was your other question?
Zane has a question.
Yeah, so just to remind listeners, we're talking with Sonia Qadir, the Lahore Women's Secretary of the Awami Workers' Party from Pakistan, who's visiting Australia at the moment. I was just keen to ask you about the high-profile murder of Kandil Baloch in July last year. So Kandil was a 26-year-old woman. She was a fashion model and a social media sensation and basically outspoken about being a sexually liberated young woman in Pakistan, and this she ended up being murdered by her brother. And from what I understand, there was mass outrage about this, and this was a bit of a watershed moment. Just wondering if you could tell listeners a bit more about that case.
Sure. So yes, as you said, Kandi Baloch was a sort of like a social media star, and she was very I've been very outspoken and sort of very confident about her sexuality and did not sort of mince words about it. And when she was murdered by her brother, this was, so the sort of honor killing, and these was definitely framed, and the reasons around it that we know are around honor killing, and it's an issue that has come back time and again, and this is not the first time. It keeps happening within, I think, the last year there have been multiple cases of honor killings, and some very well sort of very well-known, very mainstream ones, too. So, but the interesting thing is also that often there are other issues within within the question of honor killings. So sometimes there are issues of property involved, and it feels that in this case, too, there might have been that aspect of it, that's because she was the breadwinner of the family, and she was also sort of supporting her parents, that her brother might have wanted part of that, some part of that property. But in general, the issue around honor killing or sort of these kinds of murders of women is that within Pakistani criminal law, there is this provision to forgive the perpetrator, the victim's family can forgive the murderer and just accept blood money or just completely forget them, etc. And that is often actually more mostly used in cases of honor killing and or other cases where women are murdered, because often women are murdered by their close family relatives, and one of the family members will forgive the other one. And just because often, let's say, if it's the brother, then the father will forgive the son for killing his daughter. So this is really the reason why there is so much sort of talk around these issues, and why so many people get away with it, and it becomes so easy to sort of murder women and then just walk away scot-free. And this is the debate around feminist circles. And this time, too, with Kinjibu murder, the group that I'm involved with, the Feminist Collective, was very vocal on this issue, and we also issued a statement on her murder, and sort of being able to seeing that, in some ways she was a modern feminist, a contemporary feminist, because she was so outspoken. And the real issue, there are many women who are, who might do pornography or etc. But for her, the fact that she was actually calling out.
Hey, I'm Sonia. I'm really sorry. We have to cut you off now. Yeah, we're running very low on time now. The next program is trying to get started now, and Ray, thanks for that interview, Sonia. It's a shame we could not have more time to talk.
Yeah, thanks, we're running low on time. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, well, it's very good.
All right.